Hi, I'm Shauna Meyerson with the Yoga of War podcast, here today with Muslim interfaith leader Anila Ali. If you appreciate and find value in these important discussions, please consider supporting the show. Your donations ensure that I can continue to bring you such amazing and esteemed guests. Details are pinned in the comments below. The world changed on October 7th, 2023. It didn't just change for Israel. It didn't just change for the Jewish people. It changed for humanity. On that dark day, some 6,000 Gazans, both terrorists and thousands of civilians, invaded the Jewish state and committed the most unspeakable and unthinkable atrocities in modern history. While most Muslims ran to defend the orgy of evil, Anila Ali ran the other way, citing her belief in the goodness of the Quran. Anila has been unapologetically defending Israel and speaking out against both the terror rampage and the anti-Semitism that has exploded in its wake. Anila isn't anti-Muslim. She is pro-humanity, and her fight is the fight for peace, dignity, and prosperity for all of mankind. Anila Ali is a Muslim faith leader, author, and civil rights advocate promoting interfaith dialogue, women's empowerment, and religious freedom. She founded the American Muslim and Multi-Faith Women's Empowerment Council, otherwise known as AMWEC, the largest Muslim civil rights movement in America. She also co-founded CALPAC to educate girls in Pakistan. AMWEC was the only Muslim civic society organization to sign on to the Abraham Accords, and Anila is the first Muslim woman to be honored by Hadassah, the Women's Zionist Organization of America. A former teacher and political candidate, Anila has led international peacebuilding delegations and chaired international religious freedom roundtables. Based in Washington, D.C., she is dedicated to building bridges across faiths and nations. Anila, thank you so much for joining me today. It's an honor to share this conversation with you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be with you, Shaina.
Thank you. So I want to go back in time a little bit, even though we're so caught up in this moment. You grew up in Pakistan, an Islamic state where there are essentially no Jewish people. And yet in 2002, the ADL warned that Pakistan's anti-Semitism was, quote unquote, a ticking nuclear time bomb. I don't fully understand how a country of people who have never so much as encountered a Jew can hold such extremist views about an entire nation of people. But I'm curious, what, if anything, did you personally learn, or what was your perception of Jews when you were growing up?
I think you're asking the most important question that I think everyone should know. First of all, it's very important for people to understand that the Muslim world is not just the Arab world. Arabs constitute less than 20% of the Muslim world, but they were also colonizers. They went and they colonized the entire Central Asia, Southeast Asia, all the way up to Egypt. So I come from the Indus Valley civilization. Pakistan was born a movement for religious freedom, rights for Muslims, out of the whole partition of India and Pakistan. My family, they were the leaders of that movement, not just in India and then Pakistan. And my family was not just the men. It was women. Both my grandmothers, they were the leaders for the women that were coming, you know, Muslim women that were moving to the newly built Pakistan.
What year are we talking? Are we talking 1940s?
Yes, 1947. But the movement had started 10 years before that. because the British, first there was the British India, Quit India movement, Muslims, Hindus, everybody was together. But, the British did it really well. They came in, they divided us on religion. Otherwise, we had lived together, and Muslims had ruled India for 600 years. And a lot of that was my background. And for my grandmother and both my grandmothers and both my grandfathers and my father, they were all leaders in India. My father being a youth leader, following his mother, who was following the founder of Pakistan's sister, who was also a leader. So for me, matriarchy was very normal. Patriarchy, I really did not have a problem with growing up. Yes. Discrimination based on gender. I can't play these games. I can't do this because I'm a girl and I've got to be, prim and proper. Those kind of things were there. But the women of Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, they have been leaders. We've had like so many of these women. And then coming into Pakistan in 1947, at the same time, the next year, Israel was born. And so my family talked about the fact that, okay, that's a Jewish state for Jews. And then Pakistan came out like Pakistan is majority Muslim for Muslims. Muslims wanted religious freedom. They didn't want to be oppressed minorities. The British came, divided us. But now roll up your sleeves and work. Like the Jewish model was admired in Pakistan. My father always used to say, you must. Make friends with the Jewish people. They are people of the book growing
But
up.
sorry, when you say always, this was sort of in your home. This was a
Since my,
normal
since we were
discourse.
born, since we were born,
Was that
that is,
normal?
it was normal. I talked to my cousin who's like 5, 6 years younger, and she lives in Seattle, and she and I were exchanging notes, and I said, why are you different and why am I different? And she said, what do you think? And I said, the reason is that my grandmother, one, she was educated. She had learned to read and write herself. There was no school for girls in India, especially Muslim girls. She got married at 13, had my father at 14. That was the normal thing in India. And then, she told her husband, you're a journalist, you know how to read and write. Quran says, I need to learn to read. Iqra, read, educate, ilm, ilm, ilm in the Quran. So she learned how to read and write. She wrote 14 books on Islam, women's empowerment, and minorities, and Ahle Kitab, people of the book. So when I was born in a Pakistan that valued religious freedom and human rights, dignity for women and minorities. And let me tell you, Shaina, you're not going to know, but there were Jews living in Pakistan. And I can tell
I
you.
do know that
There are
there were
Jews living in Pakistan right now, too.
there's a handful. I mean, nothing like not
Well,
like a
then
percentage
I
of a
want to tell you
percent.
the stories because obviously I do religious freedom. I go meet them. I go to the graveyard and I see who was the last person who was Jewish who died. It was in 1984. There were Jews in Pakistan. There are Jews up in the north of Pakistan. One of my cousins, who's a scholar at Oxford, she wrote a book about the gems and pearls of Pakistan, the Jewish community. There were 800 of them in the north of Pakistan that she interviewed. So we have had Jews in Pakistan and we still have them, but li they live in fear. How did we, after my generation, become so anti-Semitic? Well, I tell my Arab brothers, thank you very much for funding our mosques. Thank you very much for sending us petrodollars. But now, as Muslims, it is your duty to reverse that damage because you did it. Wahhabism was not the Islam practiced in South Asia. It was Sufism. It was Islam. Islam that welcomed everybody. And that was the sermon of the Prophet of Islam. No Arab is better than an Arab, non-Arab. What did our Arab brethren do? They took the sword and they converted people. And then when they saw, oh, these people are too liberal in South Asia, they started funding our mosques. And the biggest mistake was building the Afghan army and turning them into jihadis to fight the communists and
Sorry,
then
group.
getting out of Afghanistan.
Once again, a timeline. We're talking about when, like, when did things shift? When was this pivot point?
So this shift, in my opinion, began when the US told Pakistan, you got to help us fight the communists. And Pakistan, being a small country, but aspiringly, I want to be a better country, stronger country, a leader in the Muslim world, said, okay, we'll do that. We're Muslims. We don't want communism. So Pakistan, and my father was a diplomat at that time, and his job was, he came to UK and we lived there for 10 years. His job was to get money from the US and UK, Europe, to pass that money on to the Pakistan military to build the Taliban. And we all saw what happened after that. And the whole ideology of Sayyid Qutb, which was a radical in the 11th, 12th century, that's what Al-Qaeda worshipped. They love the Muslim Brotherhood, and they started funding. Osama bin Laden he was a multi-millionaire. And then there were many other Arab millionaires and billionaires who believed in that jihad that were funding the mosques in India, Indian Muslims, Indonesia, Malaysia, America, Pakistan, Bangladesh, all of these most populous countries where I come from. We're not 15, 20% like the Arabs. We are Muslims who are 80%. That whole non-Arab region is billions of people. And what have we done to them? We have radicalized them and taught them to hate because the Arabs had a problem being the step sibling, and they have hated Jews in their DNA. We don't have hate for even Hindus in our DNA, even though we are Pakistanis and we've had partition and we killed each other in the Hindus, the Muslims in India. But we were not raised to hate India. We were not raised to hate Hindus, even though in the Quran there are, verses and and there are hadiths that were used to hate the pagans. Even now I hear people saying, Mushrikun, anyone who's not a believer, you can kill them. Those are the kinds of narratives you hear. Didn't hear them. I didn't hear them growing up.
So just to make sure I'm understanding this, so you're a Sufi versus what we hear about all the time, right? Which it sounds like the, or from what I understand, the Sufi are sort of the peaceful of the three branches. Is that accurate?
So there are two branches,
Versus like Sunni, Shia,
Shia.
Sufi?
No.
No.
So there are two major branches. Majority of the Muslims in the world are Sunni. And there is a small minority, I would say maybe 10%. In Pakistan, they're 15% Shia. Iran is majority Shia. These are the ones who went against the Sunnis because the Prophet of Islam did, when he was dying, he said, I want the man who stood for Islam and me to be the caliph. And even though, he had his cousin Ali, he said, I want this man because he's older, he's senior, and I believe, he was setting an example for meritocracy. And so he said, not bloodline, which is what Arabs love. They only believe in the bloodline. So for these guys, the 20% of Shias, they call themselves, after the Prophet died, they became kind of militant, and they started going in a schism, separating themselves from the majority of the Muslims who said, whatever the Prophet said, if he said, the first caliph's going to be Abu Bakr, we have to listen to it. If he didn't have appoint Ali, who are you to fight? And so that is the Sunni world versus the Shia world. Even though our ideologies are the same, God is one prophet, and then all the all the other books, your book, Bible, Injil, the Book of David, all of these books, we are supposed to believe in it. And I grew up learning that. learning that in every way possible, in books, in the narratives that my grandmother gave me and my parents. They always said Jews and Christians are people of the book. We get our religion from them. The monotheism came from Jews to
Right.
the Muslims in Arabia. I mean, they got it from them because they were them. You know, they had gone astray somewhere, which it says in the Quran clearly that you had started worshipping idols, but now you're back. So empty out the house of Kaaba, which is where Muslims worship. And that's what the prophet did. He was following Abraham, Ishmael, and Ishaq.
It is very interesting. The Abrahamic brothers, as you refer to them, of course, we all have the same forefathers. But before we get into some of those deeper aspects, I do want to just go back to, because the level of anti-Semitism, as reported by the ADL in Pakistan, is very dangerous. And even just as recently as a few weeks ago, Pakistan was actually threatening Israel with attacks based on what they see as the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, military attacks. Regardless, it's I'm gonna put this as delicately as I can for myself. It's always interesting when activists, right, advocate for sort of countercultural ideals. And let me make this personal. I have to be honest. It's extremely upsetting to me, for example, when I see Jews who are rallying with the jihadis or defending anti-Semites, going against the Jewish ideals that they claim to represent. I see their behaviors as a betrayal of the Jewish people. How is your defense of Israel and the Jewish people different?
My defense is different because I know my religion. And by the way, I do want to mention that you should also be keeping your eye on India and Bangladesh. Why? Because Bangladesh is 200 and something, 180 million people. India has going to have more Muslims
Yes.
radicalized than Pakistan very soon. If you look at what's happening in DC, the Indian Muslim lobby has united with your favorite people, the CARE National, and they have latched on to the Free Gaza, Free Palestine movement, and their mosques are funded by them, by the CARE National and the Muslim Brotherhood movement as well.
And
So
that's very
the whole
interesting.
area is a problem. And when you mentioned that Pakistan threatened Israel, Pakistan didn't threaten Israel. People randomly radicalized by what is on TikTok, like the liberal Jews here, also in America, the Jewish Voice for Peace and all that. They also watch TikTok and get their news on TikTok and Al Jazeera. And so, not knowing who the Jews are, what they're saying, and seeing only what Al Jazeera is seeing them, they say things like that. But the Pakistan government, let me tell you, has actually been an ally of President Trump, and the relationship is getting stronger. And the Indian lobby, they harassed me after I went to Israel because they said, you have been chosen by the Pakistanis and the US government to be a spy so that you can destroy India and Pakistan relationship, India and US, Israel relationship. Their videos, if you Google, that they got threatened that Pakistan, a nuclear country, just like they are, is going to be friends with Israel. And my thing was, if India can be friends, so can we, you know? And that's more in our benefit because there are people like us, you know? There are Pakistani Jews from Karachi living in Tel Aviv, and I met them. I've taken their videos. I've taken groups from Pakistan. With, like, the government knows in their passport it says no Israel, but they go there, and that means if Israel wants to allow them to come in, that's fine, you know. So things have changed, and it's very hard for countries like, you know, the for the world to swallow Abraham Accords and say, oh, Arabs and Israelis, they want to be friends, then who the hell are we to stop them? And then also, Pakistanis, they also like Israel. India finds it really hard to swallow that. So conspiracies abound. But let me tell you, Pakistan government actually met the foreign minister Kasuri under Musharraf was the first one who he was called by Clinton and said, hey guys, let's make friends with Israel because that's used as a wedge issue. And so President Musharraf at that time, the general, who could have done it? He could have normalized relationships because Pakistan was going on a different trajectory. We could have been friends with India. We could have been friends with Pakistan. God bless him. He's gone now. But, he went, his foreign minister met the Israeli foreign minister. Things could have happened. But of course, we have in Pakistan a menacing problem of the Taliban, the Afghan refugees. Constantly a burden on Pakistan because the Taliban are extremely radicalized. India keeps causing trouble. They had 17 embassies, missions in Afghanistan because obviously they have a problem with Pakistan, and that didn't help. All of these things exacerbated Pakistan also being on the border of Iran. In fact, after October 7th, Iran sent a missile to Pakistan. What do you think Pakistan did? They defended themselves and they shot a missile back to Iran. They don't care. They know what Iran is all about because Pakistan's military has joint exercises with Saudi Arabia, with Ukraine, with the United States. It's the sixth best military in the world. It is a nuclear country. And yes, to what I dislike, a lot of money goes into defense. More should go to education and women's empowerment, but it doesn't because we're constantly living in conflict. And my grandparents and that generation, they taught us to not live in the grievances of the past. That's why we're different.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's interesting because as a devout Muslim woman of proud Pakistani descent, and you, just as a side note, just give me a number. You left Pakistan when you were how old?
I was 10 years old.
10. Oh, I thought it was when you went to college. Okay, so
No,
you
and
just
then I came back to Pakistan after 10 years living in England through that entire war on, the Russians, because my father had to be there to do that for Pakistan. And then we came back, and my father was in Islamabad. He'd become a minister. So I was living in Karachi. I was a model. My life was so good there. Things were very different. But what changed, Shaina, was that my city, where I was born, Karachi, had become Talibanized. So there were trucks of Taliban men with their long, unruly beards, Kalashnikovs. They were the refugees, gun-toting, tobacco spewing. And then they would look at us, and we're wearing jeans. We are a different generation. And they would start saying things in Pashto that they're gonna, and there were incidents of the acid throwing on
Yeah.
your arms and things. I told my dad at that time, I don't want to live here. You raised me to be different. And Pakistan has become Talibanized. And that is the menace that kept on increasing. The radicalization in the mosque, thank you, Arab petro dollars. And then this whole influx of very jihadi-minded people coming into Pakistan. We're not jihadis. We don't want to blow ourselves up. We don't want to sell our children to Hamas and Taliban and all that. We don't do that. But
Yeah.
we got radicalized because our mosques are teaching. They're getting funded by all these radicals, and they're teaching our people to hate. This war is personal to me. The hate for Jews is personal because it is also the hate for Christians they're teaching my people. And Pakistan, all most of my family, friends, everybody's educated by the Christians. And we are taught in Islam. We have to educate and we have to respect our educators. And you know what's happening in Pakistan? I'm the Religious Freedom Roundtable chair. I have to protect my Christian friends too.
Yes.
Forced conversions of Christian girls. And Christians are the most patriotic. They were the Dalit Hindus in Pakistan, India. They were the Dalits, untouchables. So Christian missionaries go to Pakistan. They convert them. We allow that. I'm so happy when I say, okay, I'm happy that they're not untouchable anymore, that they go to church and I advocate for them. So for me, the hate for Jews, Christian, pagans, Hindu, Buddhists, that is what my father taught the Pakistanis. You can't do that. You were a persecuted minority in India. We made Pakistan. We can't do this again. We can't bear this. We can't do it to other people. And he was the one who secured the Hindu sites. He wrote all the laws for the protection of the minority houses of worship.
Yeah, it goes to prove that so much of what we believe, the ideals that we hold, come from the home. That this Taliban terror infrastructure is swirling around you, but at home you had a father and a family that instilled in you, values of tolerance and understanding. I'm curious, at what point in your life did you decide that, making peace with your Abrahamic brothers and sisters wasn't just something you were interested in, but something that was going to be such a big part of your life's mission? And why? I understand why women's empowerment, and particularly in Pakistan, is a very personal issue to you.
Of course, of
Why?
course.
Why do you care so much about making peace with the Jews, with the Christians? Why is this such a moral imperative for you?
So I chose America so that I would run away from all these Muslim countries and I would raise my daughter to be who she is now, a proud Muslim American, the wife of a US Marine sergeant, loves America and can do whatever she wants. And I came here, 9/11 happened. And from being like blending in, I'm standing out. And people are telling me, so where do you come from? So is your family okay? Do you know the family? Do you know the hijackers? Majority of the hijackers were Saudi. They were from Saudi Arabia. They were not from my country. And I'm finding, oh my gosh, I got to educate my fellow Americans, and I'm an educator. So I decided, like, I'm going to create this nonprofit so that, and of course, my children are getting called terrorists, my friends' children are getting called terrorists, and we don't know how to deal with it. I contact my friend, she's Jewish, she's with ADL. ADL fights for everybody. And they're in schools, and they have the literature. And so Melissa, she was a friend of mine. I called her and I said, you got to help me. What do I do? She said, right, we're going to show you how to do this. Then I realized the city that I chose it because it had churches and synagogues. Again, going back to, we want to live with the people of faith, monotheistic faith. That's what we do. And all of a sudden, I do feel we've forgotten our teachings. But at that time, our allies were the Jewish people, the Christian communities, two major allies who stood with us to fight that discrimination against us. And, it was a natural alliance that they would stand up for us because they know what persecution is. And when I went to the mosque in California and I started speaking out against terrorism, which is what had driven me away from my own country of birth. I never wanted to leave Pakistan. It was such a fabulous country that I lived in, luxurious for me. My family was one of the founding fathers of it. Why would I want to leave that and leave my family legacy? But I had to, thanks to the Talibanization and the radicalization. And I'm coming here and I'm finding, I go to the mosque. What do I hear? These people, are cursed in the Quran. And I'm thinking, who are they talking about in the mosque? The Quran says you can't be friends with Jews and Christians. Yes. In that context, in the story of a battle, we were fighting. And when people fight, whether they're husband and wife, they're teams. And at that time, God said, don't be part of that team, be separate, then make friends and treaties. Every story, I mean, look at the Bible, look at the Torah, everywhere there are stories like that, that people have battles and then they make friends. That doesn't mean that you have to be in battle for the rest of your entire life, that you have to be in constant conflict. And I'm hearing this thing about Israel, the bad guy in the mosque. And how do you do that? Well, first you start with Israel, you start by the BDS movement, then you start saying, oh, the most poor Muslims, poor Muslim. I was not a poor Muslim. I had a voice, I had friends, I had allies. And that's what I trained a lot of the South Asians to do, advocate for themselves. I was on a profiling list, me and my family. After 9/11, we were told to get off the plane. We'd be outside waiting. We embarked. We go to the just before the plane, outside of it, and they would say, "Ali family, can you all come here?" And my
More
kids,
than once, you were on a list,
all
or
of us. So
been...
I was on a profiling list because my date of birth matched that of a terrorist, and so my whole family was sidelined with me. And sometimes I had to be in these detention rooms with a policeman and a dog, and they'd say, "Where's your stuff?" And I'd say, "Please find it." And I decided that this, is just not okay, and I'm not gonna let this happen. I was also the founder of MWIC. I was the founder of CALPAC. I was the founder of a Pakistani student IPPA, Irvine Pakistani Families Association. I'm raising money for the schools. I believe in the American dream. You're not taking it away from me and my children. And so I advocated working with NYU's Hindu American lawyers and Asian American lawyers. I didn't care. We all didn't care. We said, if this is going to happen to me, it's going to happen to Muslims from the Christians, the Arab world. It can happen to anyone. And there were 6 million people. The other guy was a Jordanian blind guy. Both of us got together and we got people off that list with our story. Of course, NYU, Center for Human Rights and Global Justice. They were the ones who produced it in 2008. The whole global entry program came. They gave us, here's your way to redress and get out of this list. That was my America, And I taught my children, this is how you can get out. Today, my daughter is the wife of a US Marine Corps sergeant. My son is working, top clearance. It took him 7 years to get it, though, after 9/11, because he was born in Pakistan, being Muslim and young. But he was never stopped from getting a job. They just would take long to give us a security clearance. And it took him 7 years, but he worked on Air Force One. He's an amazing engineer and loves America. This is the American dream. And if we, start ruining it, like electing people like Mamdani and not understanding that CARE National, Islamic Relief, MPAC, Engage, all of these people are evil. And we, continue to support them. We are jeopardizing the future of our children.
Yes, we are, and yes, they are. And how do you reconcile the fact that the things that they're like, CARE is tied to terrorist organizations? This has been proven over and over again, but they do it in the name of Islam. So they have their defense of that. How can you explain to viewers how Mamdani calling, if he's not calling for the Intifada, he at least condones the calls for it, or CARE, or these organizations, or just go down the list of terrorist organizations who are doing what they do in the name of Islam. How do you explain that this is not when they will say They know their own motivations. This is their motivation.
Okay, so Shana, if I sit and answer the question, it's going to take a long time. But what
Okay.
I want to say to Jewish people
Yes.
is that wake up. These organizations and these individuals are a marriage of convenience between Islamism, Marxism, socialism,
Right.
and they're all anti-Islam. You know, when I hear something in Christianity, I'll ask Christians, I'll ask a pastor and say, you know, what do you, how should I understand this? Help me. And that's what I want Jewish people to do too. If somebody's telling you that terrorism is allowed in Islam, challenge it because it's not. Terrorism is haram in Islam. You're supposed to make peace. That's what the prophet did. He didn't want war. He didn't even want to take up his sword against the pagans when he was entering Makkah. And it's only when they started killing his people, God said, okay, you can use your sword. Learn about the religion. Please have your viewers read the book, The Jew Is Not My Enemy by Tariq Fatah. Muhammad Changemaker by Muhammad Jabara. These are the books I want Jews to learn. It's all about interfaith. It's that we, in our prayers, we pray to God, asking Prophet Abraham, asking Allah to bless Prophet Muhammad like he blessed Prophet Abraham. Most of us, we don't know what we're praying. Sadly, because it's Arabic language and majority of the Muslims are non-Arabs. But I can guarantee you that if you take this to a Muslim and say, you pray five times a day, and now you're saying you want to kill the Jewish people, that free Palestine, river to sea means that you want to kill the Jews, that you want that whole area, you want it to be free of Jews. So ask them, do you believe really that you want to kill the Jews to have a nation for the Palestinians? Because God doesn't even mention Palestine in the Quran. There is no word Palestine. There is only Israel, children of Israel, Yaqub alayhi salam, Jacob and his tribes, Musa and Prophet Moses and Prophet Jesus, peace be upon them. They are the greatest prophets, including Prophet Muhammad, our last prophet. So how can you be asking to kill all of these people and say, free, free Palestine? You are not a Muslim if you do that. You have to believe in the Torah if you believe that. If they are saying that, Shana, they are believing in the Hamas, Hezbollah, and Muslim Brotherhood manifestos, charters, which call for every woman should be a reproductive organ producing jihadi fighters. Give your children away. That is why on October 7th, that hijacker, the terrorist, he calls his mother and he says, Ummi, call Abba and tell him I killed 10 Jews with my bare hands. And nowhere in the Muslim world they have seen that video. So when I tell my imams and when I tell people that I have seen it, that is why I took the trip, because I come back and I bear witness that when I die, I know I said the truth. And I can face my Muslim brothers and sisters and say, that is why I stood up for the people of Israel, which includes Muslim and Black Muslims in the Negev Desert. I went to see them. His wife was killed, Hamad's wife was killed. And they said, we are not Muslim. What do you think? We are the Blacks of Africa. Nobody wanted us. These people have given us a home. 250 plus thousand Black Israeli Muslims now. They are Black Muslims who are saying they killed us. Come on.
No, there were certainly quite a few Muslims who were massacred
Right.
and even kidnapped on 10/7. It was against the Jewish state, not just the Jews within it, because the Muslims who live in the Jewish state are seen as complicit. But I want to focus on you. You are my guest, and you are not only my guest, you are my guest of great honor. So let's switch back to something a little more positive.
Yes.
Because your work had, believe me, I have plenty of episodes that are just hardcore the whole time, but what you're doing is so positive. So I'd like to stack on that. On the 21st, Monday, MWEC, your organization, had its annual National Changemakers Conference. And this year, you actually focused on combating anti-Semitism, hate, and extremism. I mean, you could choose any focus you wanted. I'm curious, given the situation in the Middle East, did this year's conference feel different from past conferences? And if so, how?
This year's conference was focused on anti-Semitism because that's what we saw when Rashida and Ilhan were elected. We thought they will come and bring the Jews and Muslims together and they'll go to Israel and they'll say, let's make peace, let's get the Palestinians their state, let's negotiate. That's what leaders do. They failed us miserably. Instead, they unleashed the worst kind of anti-Semitism. And they normalized it. They made it normal. Before that, they were hearing it in the mosque, in their TikToks and Al Jazeera, and they were listening to it. But Arabs have that in their DNA. The South Asians didn't, bless you. And when that changed,
Sorry.
bless you, and it started coming into our conversation, people would say, "How? But Anila, should we not say something about?" And I said, peacemakers, bring people together. I had to mentor my board too. I had to ask them. I've lost a lot of them. In California, especially, I lost my board. They all resigned saying, free, free Palestine, river to sea. And they started hating the Jews. And so for me,
Wait, I need to take a step back. So MWEC, it again, it's the American Muslim and Multi-Faith Women's Empowerment Council. In there is the word multi-faith. This, among other things, is an organization that is a peace-building organization. And you are saying that your board left because of anti-Israel, anti-Jewish sentiments.
No, they
No.
had those sentiments,
Yeah.
right? And I had been holding them back. They would go to the mosque and they'd hear all this rhetoric. Oh, the Palestinians are being, they'd never hear about Syria. And I would always say that, there's something wrong. Like they are pushing you that way because everything can't be about Israel and Palestine. There are Kashmir is a, it's the most important issue, and hopefully President Trump is going to solve that because he's offered that to Pakistan and India. But that is a nuclear issue. Why are we focused on this? And Gaza was not a problem. They were the Hamas had been given Gaza so many years ago, more than 2 decades ago, in 2007 or something. 2005 they had elections. 2000. I've met the leaders who lost to Hamas. Do you know? I've been there. And so I said, listen, guys, we've been to Israel. We know what the truth is. We have to have moral clarity. But on October 7th, all my California board members, they resigned except for two. No, except for three. And they said that, no, the Jews control the world and da, 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 and Jews are cursed in the Quran. And I said, I failed. I failed to educate them. I failed to even have them open the Quran. I should have been teaching the Quran.
It's very heartbreaking that people who are in the peace building space are still holding those kinds of ideas.
But I want to give you the hopeful thing
Okay.
that we built AMEC from scratch. A couple of my board members from California, Suraya Deen, Zeba Zeibunnisa, they moved here. And they kind of bi-coastal. Suraya, Zeba's here. But they said, we're going to work with you and we're going to do this. And together we built an organization that is not going to have, any kind of qualms about standing up for what is morally right. And in our faith also, because we are multi-faith, we have Jewish people, we have Christians, we have Sikhs, and we have Hindus. So we're not going to turn a regional conflict into our relationships and have geopolitics of these conflict regions, divide us. Like today, what can happen, Shaina, is like Muslims and Hindus, Indians and Pakistanis, we can stop talking.
I
But
know.
at our conference on the 21st, there was a Hindu leader, and he was on Pakistan TV being interviewed, saying, why are you here? Because we don't want to have what happened between Muslims and Jews and Israelis and Palestinians happen. We want to be able to continue our parents' legacy, talk to each other, Islamic legacy, peace, make a deal, Abraham Accords. That's a sacred deal for us. And we stood by it even in the most difficult times. I can tell you, we've been harassed. And we said, no, with the name of Abraham, our patriarch, we are going to sign this. This is his children, Ishaq and Ishmael. In the end, they came together. They're brothers, they're siblings. Siblings fight, but they don't kill each other. And at least we know that's wrong. And if they want to come together, we're going to make them come together. So Hindus, Sikhs, everybody came together. And because anti-Semitism, like you said, it's, majority of the hate crimes, according to FBI, are directed to like the teeniest, 70% of the hate crimes are directed to the teeniest population, 2% of the Jewish people. And it is wrong. It is wrong on all levels to, as Americans, as Muslims, as people of faith, as neighbors, not to stand up. And so we had wonderful, organizations come together. What we want to do is we want to continue adding, organizations to our group and saying, if you believe that we are one human race, that America and American communities need to be strengthened by us, not divided on based on religion and your political affiliation and your opinions on conflicts. If you want Palestinians to have peace and have a state, shouldn't you be asking for peace? Let's come together, like Pakistan and Bangladesh, like America and Japan, like America and Germany. You want to continue the victimhood and remain keep the Palestinians in this mindset that nobody loves them, they are being persecuted. I've been to Gaza, and this was in 2019, and it could have been Dubai. It
Of course.
was, but except, I had a fatwa, so I had to get out really quickly. I went to Jenin and I said, oh my God, I wish like I knew these are not really, they're towns, they're cities. Everything is like working there. They have free drinking water, clean. Pakistan doesn't. India doesn't. Bangladesh doesn't. They have it thanks to the Israeli technology. So we can benefit from the, smarts of our Israeli friends. Take that technology to Pakistan, Bangladesh, which is what I'm fighting for. That President Isaac Herzog, when he met us, we were Pakistanis, Bangladeshis, Indonesians, Malaysians, majority Pakistani, yes. And there was a Jew from Pakistan, by the way. His name is Fishel Benflat. He's the one who kept telling me, take me to my homeland. And I asked the Pakistan government, I want to take him. They gave me permission to take him. What happened after is another story. But I took him. And Mehmet Qureshi, a journalist from Pakistan, we were all there meeting President Herzog, said, go back to your countries, Muslim countries, tell them we want to be friends. And I said, that's what we're going to do. And that's what we did, that we said, Jews, Muslims, Christians, let's come together. We have to be stronger than this very marginalized, loud, annoying voice. And we have to tell people who they really are. There's, the time to be nice to them, to sugarcoat your words and your language is over. It's,
Yes.
it's time to tell Jewish people, who are your allies? They're not. Because I've heard behind closed doors what happens. They say, oh, sister, you don't know. They are cursed. They will use you. And then they'll drop. And I said, okay, thank you. Because if I, you're telling me what my grandparents said, they're Ahle Kitab. They believe in God. I believe in God. And for me, that's sacred.
I love that. Listening to you, Anila, your passion is incredible, and the fact that in that whole statement that you just made, of understanding and peace and tolerance and in hope for the future, there was this one sentence that you don't even pause when you say there's a fatwa on your hat, and it, and you're just like, and blah 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 blah. Okay, that's remarkable. That's a remarkable point that people have to understand, that you're not just advocating for love between Abrahamic brothers and sisters. You're risking your life to advocate it, which makes a lot of sense. You again are the first woman to be honored by Hadassah as being one of the only, there were 18 American Zionist women who were selected, who stand with the Jewish people, and you are doing this literally at the risk of your own life. It's mind-blowing in a way that I think most people can't wrap their heads around. I'm thinking, of course, of Salman Rushdie, that even decades later, somebody was still trying to assassinate him. It puts your whole life at risk. And in your own words, you proudly identify as a Muslim Zionist. What does that mean to you, and why is that worth risking your life for?
You know, I till my parents were alive, I knew that I didn't want to transfer till my kids were younger. And then in the past 4 or 5 years, I saw, the terrorism, the radicalization, the Islamism take over America. And for me, America, living in America is a privilege for my kids to be where they are. I'm thanking my nation, the country that has given me and many millions of Muslims refuge, and we have to be more grateful. And that means that when we go to a mosque and we hear this kind of rhetoric against anybody, I mean, I love, of course, Jews and Christians because they are my people, they're Abrahamic people. But against anyone, we have to rise up. Even Shias, we hear things about Shias. And no, Islam says, La ikraha fid-deen. There is no compulsion in religion, and you don't use religion. The prophet's relatives were pagans. They didn't accept Islam. Did he force them into conversion? Never. If they wanted to convert, he could. And we were just talking about this the other day. We're saying all we have to do is read these books, and they need to be translated into every language so that Muslims, actually non-Arabic speaking, actually understand what the Arabic speaking imam is saying, and they're able to contest him. Because that's what I did. I lived in Saudi Arabia, I started speaking Arabic, and I said, no, I don't like what you're saying. Sorry, that's not what I heard. I have read. I opened up the Quran. I started reading. So we must read. We must learn. I learn about Judaism. I learn about Christianity. That's what we gotta do. I learn about Hindu. Their religion and their faith. Everybody, I want to learn about everybody because that makes me a stronger Muslim. I learn about Allah's people. Allah's created everybody. Yes, we are Abrahamic, but then if he willed, everyone would have been the same. And that would have kind of been boring. We would be all like the Stepford wives.
Yeah, it makes you not just a better Muslim, it makes you a better human. I know you wanted to finish in an hour, and we've got 5 minutes left, and I have 5,000 questions left. So I'm gonna just go ahead and skip down. We'll wrap this up. I would like to just ask, what has been or have been your biggest bridge building wins since the October 7th attacks?
I think the biggest win was, of course, July 21st. and the Muslims who were with us silently saying, "We are with you." The imams who contact me from New York, East Coast to West Coast, and there's 135, 40 of them who call me and say, "Sister, we are with you." Oh my gosh, like that's all I need. I need Muslims like me to come forward, and now there are Muslims. So I wanted to bring my Jewish and Christian friends together and say, these are your allies. Meet them. And I don't want to hear, where are the moderate Muslims? We were all there. We were there to say, we don't want Islam to be synonymous with Palestinianism. It's not. Islam is sacred. It's our religion. So don't desecrate it. And we don't want Islam to be synonymous with terrorism, extremism, radicalization. It's our fight to win our religion back for our children, for my grandchildren who live in California. I don't want them to go to UCLA and see no Jew zone. That is not okay. And I want my little granddaughters to wear their Allah necklace, and for their friends who are Jewish to wear their Star of David and do it with pride, without fear. Otherwise, why did I move here? I asked myself. So I'm a big believer. I believe in God, and I believe that God perhaps has given me this composure and this faith because he wants me to do this for his people, all of us. And yes, the Iranian regime put a fatwa on me after I spoke at the March for Israel rally, and I took the delegation to Israel, and I came back and I said, I'm not alone. There are many Muslims who are saying, this is wrong. We know what's happening. And, the be most beautiful thing is, Shaina, many more countries are now going to join the Abraham Accords because they have seen how bad it got. And there are many countries that already are without making a big do about it. And they are Muslim countries, large Muslim countries. So I'm seeing, a change. It's going to be hard for people to swallow that. And so everything went so bad October 7th that now it can only get better. So you'll see that inshallah, our movement will become the national movement. Jewish, Christian, Hindu, Sikh organizations who believe in standing on this platform and fighting together for religious freedom for everyone. They need to be part of this coalition, whether you're a church, synagogue, Chabad synagogue, whoever you are, join us because our voices will then be the voices of America. And then we can silence all the extremists on the left and right who are, who don't like us. We'll be so strong.
Ultimately, there are only two ways to peace. One is through war, and one is actually through peace. And that's the hope that the Abraham Accords afford us. And it's also amazing that AMWAC is the only organization. I don't even know what that looks like since it's between states that signed on to the Abraham Accords. So thank you for that. Anila, you are building bridges, you are creating a better humanity, and you are changing the world. So for that, I thank you. And I want to know, for our listeners, where can people find you and how can they support your work?
Thank you. Join our movement. Go to ammwec.org, sign our manifesto. If you can donate and join our newsletter, obviously that's going to help. But most importantly, speak out with us, stand with us. And if you have a church or a synagogue or a mandir or temple or gurdwara that you go to, go there and tell them, join the National Coalition on Fighting Anti-Semitism and Hate. And perhaps you know that this hate will become some other hate. Anti-Semitism is always followed by some other kind of hate. And at that time, imagine you look left and right, you'll have partners, you'll have allies. My board member, she was told, what kind of jihad Muslim are you? Are you a jihadi Muslim? Are you a Muslim? What kind of Muslim? Be the Muslim that Prophet Muhammad was and come join us, stand with our Abrahamic brothers and sisters. and say we are stronger together.
Thank you so much. Last question. What does Am Yisrael Chai mean to you?
That this is the chosen land for the people of Israel. And Israel in the Quran means Prophet Yaqub, Jacob. The land of Israel is Allah says, for the children of Israel. And so we as Muslims came thousands of years after them, you know, after the Christians, after the Jews. Let's learn to live with them. There is no reason why Palestinians and Israelis can't live together. You know, they share so much history. And if they really care about their future generations, like Pakistanis and Bangladeshis and, you know, Americans and Japanese, then they're going to put the grievances of the past right there and say, let's live together. You can live on this land of Allah, God, and we can live on this land too. And there's no reason why you can't. When Caliph Umar went there, he said, bring in the Jewish people, it's their land. And Allah changed the direction of prayers to Makkah. Why? Because that land belonged to the Jews and then the Christians. It is their holiest place. Our holiest place is Saudi Arabia.
Amen. Anila, thank you so much. This has been very informative, very enlightening, and very, very uplifting. Thank you for sharing your wisdom, your knowledge, and your love with all of us. And
And I say, Am Yisrael Chai, as we end.
Am Yisrael Chai.